welcome back to AA Opera Podcast episode. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
95. So close to that 100 right now.
So, well, we've just been doing an interview with a guest and realized that guest is going to be episode 99, I think. Yeah. So it is approaching, fast approaching.
So fast.
But it also made us realize we got to get some planning in for episode 100. Oh my
God. We need to do something special. Please let us know what you think would be really special for us to do for 100 episodes of us chatting with people and ourselves. Anyway, Ashley, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good, good, good. Partly because I know that a holiday is fast approaching.
Yeah, you have an exciting weekend coming up.
I do have an exciting weekend coming up. I will talk about that on next week's podcast when I can actually give my view on such location, but it is
so secretive.
It's so secretive. So yeah, just very much in the swing of things generally, and but like counting down the days to a little break. So I think that's what's chugging me along this week.
Chug.
How are you doing?
I am good. I am also ready for a break. It's currently half term, so I'm very excited to have a weekend this weekend. Where I can sit back, relax. I need to get a new book. So, I currently am reading two very trashy books, which we're not going to mention which ones on this podcast, but thank you very much, Ellie, for loaning them to me.
Wow. Like, how trashy are we talking here?
Oh, we're talking trash. Right. We're talking trash. But good trash.
But do you know what? Look at it this way. Feel better that you're reading trashy book rather than watching trashy TV.
That's what I've been telling myself. You know what happened? I've been watching a lot of TV.
Mm.
I'm currently in between employment. Okay. So I have a lot of time on my hands. And it was the fact that I was already on season 4 of rewatching Schitt's Creek. That only took me 3 days, and I was like, all right, we need to change our tune.
Well, here's a little competition for us both. How many times have you rewatched Schitt's Creek?
This would be my third time.
Okay, yeah, I've rewatched it 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those.
It's one of those, but I was really upset because I fell asleep during the open mic night episode.
Oh, I love that episode.
Yeah, and I was like, oh no! Right. And I realized it when, like, it was after the open mic night episode, and like there's the like going back to sing the song, and I was like, oh no, I have to go back and watch it again.
All I'll say is I hope that our listeners are into Schitt's Creek as well, otherwise the last minute and 30 has been like what? Go and watch it. It's
go
great.
Go watch it.
Yeah.
Moira Rose for life.
Yeah.
Bebe. But yeah, no, so it was the fact that I had watched so much Schitt's Creek that I was like, okay, we need a change of pace now.
Mm.
So, read 200 pages of this trash book in 2 days.
Good for you.
Yeah. Almost done with it now. Gonna do the second one. And then need to go and get a new book. I was actually gonna join the library.
Okay.
Because I don't want any more books in my house.
Well, it comes to mind, what do you think of e-readers, like a Kindle?
I have a Kindle.
Right.
I don't mind them, but I rather not. I like a book. I feel like it depends what you're reading.
Mm. I kind of get that. I got a Kindle for Christmas and I do love it. And I love the fact that it's not filling my apartment with books. But I do get that it's nice to hold a book in your hands and read it. Anyway,
enough Kindle talk.
I think it's about time we get on with this week's episode, and it is the delightful Rachel Williams, who is CEO of Streetwise Opera, and she has a lot to say. You'll hear all about Streetwise and all of the great work that they do, but you'll also hear a good bit of business chat about leadership. Ooh. and all things there, which we don't talk about enough, I don't think, in this industry. So I'm going to hand it over to Rachel. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Rachel, a very warm welcome to AA Opera Podcast. Hello,
hello. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much for having me.
A pleasure. Would you like to start off by introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Rachel Williams and I'm Chief Executive at Streetwise Opera.
Amazing.
So what was your first experience with opera?
So I was thinking about this. My first experience, I think, was when I was at sixth form college. Shout out to Farnborough Sixth Form College, which was my great sixth form college. And our music department, so I did A-level music, and our music department took a group of us on a trip to see Madame Butterfly at the Royal Opera House. Oh. And we got those seats. You know, there are seats right down the side where you can see about two-thirds of the stage. And I think a lot of us were quite confused, really, for quite a lot of the opera, because we were like, what's going on? We missed that bit. So I think it was great, and musically it was brilliant, but it was also, it wasn't quite like the viewing experience that one would love. But I would say the first time that I really got kind of switched on to opera was when I was at uni and I saw a Welsh National Opera production of Rigoletto. And I went, I don't know why I decided to do this, but I went on my own. And I got some really cheap student ticket, like up in the gods. And I was just absolutely captivated by it. I just found it so kind of moving. I thought the music was just so kind of overwhelming and incredible. And just the sort of moment at the end where Rigoletto like unzips the bag and Gilda's in there. I just remember kind of sort of almost crying. And I think that was the moment where I was like, wow, like this is something kind of really powerful. And it was interesting because my parents were, you know, I was really lucky to have parents who liked going to the theatre. So I spent quite a lot of time, you know, as a young person, like my parents would, we live on a train line that takes us up to London. And so we'd often go to the National Theatre like at Christmas and we'd go and see their Christmas show. So theatres felt like, I was really lucky to have this quite kind of familiar-ish environment.
Yeah.
But opera really kind of didn't. And so I think that was a moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is really packs a punch.
I'm always interested in the fact that people who go to theatre don't necessarily go to opera. Like, why is it two separate things?
Yeah.
That's my brain went on a tangent there when you said that.
It's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, we may come on to this a little bit later when we talk about the art forms, but I think I would say for me, the reason was that, like, my parents feel comfortable in a theatre, but I don't think they feel comfortable in an opera house. And actually, I would say my dad turned 80 last year, and for his 80th birthday, my mum got him a trip to the Royal Opera House, and it was the first time he'd ever been.
Wow.
And they were, oh goodness, I wish I could remember. I think they actually might have seen Madame Butterfly, in fact, in a sort of slightly full stuff, but I can't recall. And I bought them like a nice, like a posh meal in the restaurant there. So that was his sort of 80th birthday present. And my dad really likes classical music and really, you know, he engages with classical music. But I would say for him, like the idea that the opera has a place that for him, I don't think that feels as intuitive. And I think that there is something about opera that I think feels more elitist than theatre.
Yeah.
And I think you know, that's not, theatre's not perfect either, but I think there is a difference, I think, to how they're perceived. And some of that's about ticket price, but not all of it.
So, I don't think it's about ticket price anymore.
No,
I don't think it is either.
No. Definitely not.
Just a personal opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think often we can place a lot on ticket price, and we say, "Oh, if the tickets were just cheaper, then it would be fine." And
there are
cheaper tickets. Exactly,
there are cheaper tickets.
Yeah,
you were at ROH last night, weren't
for
you?
For £17.
Absolutely, yeah. And I always think, I always quite enjoy the cultural. You know, if you think about what a season ticket costs to go to the football, there's wild amounts of money.
This
right?
has come up so many times on this podcast.
So I actually watched on. It's like a. It's from 2020, that old year. There was a show called The English Game, which is about football, like the beginning of football.
Oh wow, yeah.
And it's by the same guy who did Downton Abbey.
Julian Fellows. Yeah.
And it was just like they were talking about how, like, what because it was the class divide during the football, and I was like, this can't work for opera.
Yeah.
Screaming at the TV.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can't wait to hear all about Streetwise Opera today, of which you're now chief executive. But first, we'd love to hear about what led you to this role. Was it always your aim to have a career in the theatre, in particular producing and in theatre management?
I would say it wasn't always my intention necessarily to be in this kind of job. So interestingly, when I was at school, I played quite a lot of music, and so a lot of my career up to now has been in the sort of more theatre-y bit of the sector. But when I was younger, I sang in choirs and I played the clarinet, so I was in some sort of wind bands and orchestras and things like that. And it wasn't really until I got to university that I started getting into theatre and the more kind of, like the sort of performing arts aspect of it, or the stage aspect of it. And I sort of, again, slightly stumbled into that. I think I was just sort of interested in trying it out or giving it a go. There were a lot of people at my uni wanted to direct things and act in things, and I did a little bit of that. But I think in my first term, like, everyone needed a producer. Like, everyone was like, can you produce this thing? I want to do this show. There's no one to produce this show. And I think someone I'd met was like, oh, I really need a producer for this. And I was like, all right, I think I could do that. Like, I'll have a go at that. And then quite quickly, I was like, oh, actually, I really like this. Because I think what I enjoy about producing in particular, or this side of it, is it combines so many things. It's a really creative job. Like, you work really closely with, you know, a director or an artistic director, depending on your context, on, you know, what is the production you want to do, or what's the shape of that production, your casting, you're looking at it, you know, in this really creative way. But also you have the really tangible thing of, like, we need to translate that into a reality, in an operational and financial reality. And I really enjoy the fact that it really spanned all of that. I think it made it feel really satisfying and really tangible. So I did quite a bit of that at university and really liked it. And then I moved to London to do a master's. And while I was there, the master's course sort of wasn't quite for me. Like, I think it's no for the master's course. It just didn't quite suit me.
That's totally understandable.
Yeah. And so I thought, oh, I feel like, I want to just think about, you know, like, you know, because I think I had a vague thought of, oh, maybe if I love this, maybe academia is the way I'd go. And I think I thought, no, I don't think this is right. And I thought, well, I really like theatre, so let's see, you know, what's around. And at that point, the Old Vic had this scheme called the Old Vic New Voices Scheme, which was all about, I mean, they do loads of talent development stuff now, but at that point, that scheme was about supporting emerging writers, actors, directors and producers. And they had a particular project, which was a producing project that I applied to. And I don't know why they gave me it, because I had no real, I'd done a sales and ticketing job for an outdoor theatre company, so I knew how to sell tickets, but I just talked about my student producing experience, and they gave me a little shot at it, and I was like, oh yeah, I think I quite like to do this. And then from there I thought, well, I'm just going to apply for any job possible. I knew that producing was where I wanted to go, but producing jobs are kind of super competitive, so I thought I'd just apply for anything. And funnily enough, where I ended up was in the fundraising department of English National Opera. And I didn't I wasn't particularly aiming at a kind of opera background, but, like, you know, I applied to loads of places, like 30, 40 interviews, and that was the job that I got. So suddenly, you know, my experience of Rigoletto up in the gods, I could sit in the stalls during a stage and orchestra, because I was in the fundraising team. You know, I was working on the Friends scheme, and we'd invite people to dress rehearsals. I was seeing these operas so up close, and that was really incredible. And actually, it's interesting, like, fundraising is not where I wanted to be, but, like, just a skill that in any kind of producing, leadership, management role.
I was just thinking.
You gotta have it.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, half of producing is networking and getting to know people and talking to people.
And getting the funds to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And interestingly, I would say that the next two jobs I did, so I did a producing job at a small theatre called The Gate in Notting Hill, and then I was executive director of a company called Improbable, and neither of those are ostensibly fundraising jobs, but I would say my fundraising experience swung those jobs my way, probably, because The Gate at the time didn't have a fundraising department, so the producing team did the fundraising, so I could bring this experience of working in, like, a 12-strong fundraising department with me. And then at Improbable, we were launching lots of new fundraising initiatives, so I brought that background. So I think when I was at, you know, I was like, I want to be a producer, I don't want to be a fundraiser. But actually, it was really critical in, really, you know, the rest of my career. Yeah. Yeah, from there, I went and I was executive director at Improbable. Then I moved to a theatre in North London called The Park, where I was executive director. And then, to loop back around to kind of like why this job. So I've been at The Park for sort of 5 years, and I really loved, you know, running a venue. And I think that I was sort of starting to get to a point where I was thinking about what's next. And, you know, obviously the last few years have been a really turbulent and sort of terrible time. And I feel really strongly about the arts and how important the arts are. But I think sometimes I have a minor existential crisis, and you sort of look out at the world and you're like, oh, maybe I should be putting my energy onto something that's based more around social impact. You know, this feels like there's so much happening. And I always, when I had those, I have those every 3 or 4 years, and I sort of always thought, no, I think the arts is so valuable and this is where I want to put my energy. But I was sort of in the midst of one of those existential crises when the Streetwise job came up. And I sort of thought, you know, having been in theatre for a long time, I hadn't done a job that, you know, so kind of purely in the music sector before. And that felt really exciting to me. In my spare time, I'm a, you know, very amateur singer. So I sing in a choir. So the fact of, you know, singing being this really uplifting experience felt really, really kind of pertinent. And then there was this whole social impact side of it. So it felt like it just came along at the right moment. And what's been brilliant is, being at Streetwise, I feel more convinced than ever that the arts are just so essential to us and the world. So that's been really, that's been really great.
So just before we start talking about Streetwise, you also mentioned that you were the executive director at Improbable Theatre and then Park Theatre. What is the role of an executive director within a company?
Very good question. So the way I would describe it is, often executive directors, most of the time executive directors, will sort of have a sort of double act with an artistic director. So you'll be working really closely with an artistic director to lead the company. And I think in the sort of the best examples of this, and the way I think it works best, is where those two roles are not like there's a line down the middle and one does this and one does that, but actually they're intertwined. And that, you know, I've been really lucky with that, you know, all the artistic directors I've worked with have been fantastic, and they really care about, you know, all aspects of running a company and running a building. But I suppose if you want to kind of, to delineate the sort of responsibilities, ultimately the artistic director is developing, you know, what is the vision for this company. And that is absolutely, you know, what individual plays or operas are we programming, but also like overall, like who are we, what's our artistic identity. And then as an exec, what you're doing is leading on how do we translate that into reality, into a financial, operational, you know, reality. And I think what that often means is, you know, trying to kind of keep the kind of core values in mind and that vision in mind and marry it to your financial reality, essentially. And I think the other massive aspect of it, I think, is around kind of organisational culture and people. I feel like if you're going to have a set of kind of artistic values about the kind of work you want to programme and the kind of messages you want, you need to translate that into the way that you treat your staff and the way that your organisation runs. And I think exec directors, you know, anyone in a leadership team plays a part in that, but exec directors in particular, I think, play a really big part in thinking about, like, how do we treat our employees, how do we treat our freelancers, like how do we create a culture that's really strong and feels in keeping with our, you know, artistic ethos and values, so it permeates right the way through.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. And to talk a little bit more about leadership, through your work in the industry so far, you have built up a great reputation of being a successful leader of arts organisations. I'd love to ask, what does it take to be a good leader within the arts industry?
It's such a good question, and I can only speak from my personal experience of it. And I think there's something about really understanding and knowing what success looks like. I think when part of your job is that you're managing money and finance, you know, all day. And I mean, look, we're in a moment where I would say every arts organisation, or a lot of arts organisations, we're in a really challenging economic climate. We're having to take really difficult decisions. Knowing what it is that your ultimate goal is, what you're there to do, is sort of so important. And I think that, you know, this is being incredibly reductive to, you know, the commercial sector, so not the commercial arts sector, like to the business sector. But I think sometimes, you know, if you're in a kind of profit making business of any kind,
yeah,
like it's not to say it's profit, you know, over everything, but ultimately success is like we're profitable, like that's what that is. But I don't think as an arts organisation, you know, you could have an amazing financial year but make terrible productions, like in a terrible way. And like that isn't success. So I feel like one of the key challenges and the thing I think that makes, when I've observed people that I admire, is that they know what we're trying to achieve. And yes, the finances have to match. And yes, you know, you have to make sure that you're generating money through box office and fundraising. But like that's going towards something. And I think keeping that in your mind all the time is really hard, but it's really essential. And I think when I look at arts organisations that kind of thrive, that's often what I see, that they've got a really clear sense of that. And I think also like the other things is, like, this is sort of sounds a bit dumb, but sort of just showing up. Like, you've just kind of, I think there was something I was reading, there's a blog that I read by a guy called Seth Godin, who I really love, so much wisdom. I really recommend this blog. And he talks quite a lot about organizational culture. And I was going through a sort of situation, and someone I know who also reads this blog forwarded me this one particular entry. And he said, you know, the Grand Canyon was not built, you know, that was not formed by a lightning strike. That was rain chipping away at the rock day after day after day. And I think there is something about like leadership that's a bit like that. I think sometimes we have this perception of leaders, sometimes we can view them in this sort of almost like heroic battle-like way, that you're at the front and you're leading the charge and you're making the speech. And I sort of, my experience again of leaders I admire is that it's not really that actually you show up day after day and you bring your best self, and you're vulnerable and you're open, and also critically you listen to people, you know that you're not perfect, you take feedback, you think about it, you reflect on it, you shift, you change. And that is, I think, that's the work that you have to do.
Yeah, especially in the arts, as it is so collaborative.
Yeah.
If you're not a good collaborator and willing to work as a team, even if you are labelled as the leader, then it's just not
totally work. There was someone else I wish I could remember who this was, that I'm gonna do something that's no good for a podcast, which is do a hand gesture, but someone described to me this again as an arts leadership thing, that they said that they described the energy of an arts organization as like, I'm just wiggling my fingers around, like lots of buzzing energy, like all these little things happening, and they were like, the job of the leader is to do this, and they cut their hands together
like a holder,
yeah, exactly, like holding it. And again, I like that image a lot, that sense that you're not pushing it or driving or shaking, you're holding it.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. And I think the other thing, the final thing I'd say is, I think you also need, I think good leaders also are courageous. And I think that's, you know, you are going to have to make decisions sometimes that are not popular, but are necessary. And often they're decisions that, you know, you might know the full reason for why you're making them, but not everybody will know the full reason for why you're making them. And you have to sort of have the courage to say, people are not going to like this, or, you know, this isn't going to be desirable to this group or that group. But I know that it's the right thing and we're going to have to do it anyway. And I think that does, that does take courage. And it's something that, you know, I find difficult and I work on all the time, like in myself.
Yeah, but it is true. There's like just so much going on in the creative industry that you just have to kind of be there.
Just be there.
Like, you don't necessarily have to say anything, but you have to be there.
I totally agree. Keep your ears open, like, and just hear what's happening. Yeah.
Finally, we're on to Streetwise.
Yeah.
So you currently are at Streetwise. What is Streetwise Opera?
So, I'm so glad you asked. Streetwise Opera is an opera company that makes work with people that have experienced homelessness. We've been around for about 20 years, and we were founded by the fantastic Matt Peacock, and he now runs a great organisation called Arts and Homelessness International. He was inspired to set up the organisation by a terrible quote from an MP. And I'll try and get this right. It's somewhere on our website, so people can check if I've got this right. Something like, homeless people are the people you step over on your way out of the Opera House. So this was the this is the quote from this MP. And Matt was volunteering at a homeless shelter at the time. And he was also, I think he's, he was a, you know, an opera critic, and he was in the music world. And I think this came up with some of the people in the homelessness setting. And they decided that actually, like, you know, people who've experienced homelessness deserve to be in the Opera House and are as welcome in the opera world as anyone else. So they staged an opera in the Royal Opera House called The Little Prince, and it went down brilliantly well. And I think at the end of that experience, the people that participated in it was like, well, what's next? We can't stop at that. So Matt was like, right. So, and then Streetwise Opera then was born from that place.
Fantastic. We want to hear about all of the different projects that you do. Looking on your website, I was wondering if you could tell us more about Streetwise Resound.
Yes, absolutely. So this is our major artistic project for this year. And Resound is, so I'm going to use our tagline, which is an operatic journey through our cities. So we make work at the moment in London, Manchester and Nottingham. And what we wanted to do was really capture how our participants view their cities, like through the lenses that, you know, the lens that they see their city through. A big part of our work is co-creation. So we've commissioned 9 composers, some really exciting composers, to create 3-minute micro operas, co-created with different participant groups, three groups per city, so you get 9 micro operas in total. And we're going to unite them all together in one, essentially like a song cycle, like an opera cycle. Wow. Essentially, all 9 together, to create this sort of picture of these 3 cities. We started on that process now. 6 of them are composed, 3 of them are being composed sort of this in the next few months. We do a couple of previews, and then in March there will be that final performance of all of these 9 together. And alongside that, we've got this fantastic microsite which documents a lot of that making process. We're really interested in talking about like how we make the work as well as what the work is, and you can kind of keep up to date on all of the progress there. So yeah, that is Resound.
That sounds so incredible.
Yeah.
We're really excited about it. And I think, you know, one of the things we've been sort of pondering is during COVID, and I can talk about this I can't take any responsibility for it. I think the Streetwise team just did an absolutely incredible work in moving everything that we did online. So yeah, before my time, and that the team that were there, just, it was amazing that all of those sessions moved online. And one of the things that was interesting was, think our participants loved being able to connect with each other across the city. So yeah, people in London were chatting to people in Nottingham. And so when we were thinking about our projects for this year, we were sort of thinking, how can we sort of combine, you know, how is there a way that the regions can kind of speak to each other? And actually doing it in this form where it's kind of like a cycle, you can get that sense that you've got these things that link and that link and that link, whilst also being distinct to the region. So that's sort of how part of the reason we landed upon this format.
Yeah, that's so interesting. But like, it's also, how do you come up with micro opera that you guys produce? How did that come about, and how are those actually created? Like, how is that arc built when it's 3 different composers?
Yeah,
several different composers creating these 3-minute operas.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a few different ways that we're sort of linking things together. So a lot of it is sort of through the staging aspect of it. So we're working with 3 choreographers across, 1 in each city, but they're all constantly in dialogue. So they're talking about, you know, okay, what are those motifs, you know, we're co-creating, you know, the movement as well, but what are those motifs, what are those things that kind of move across the cities that are shared, that sort of can physically kind of link them together when they're staged. And the other thing that we're doing is we're working with an amazing animation company called 1927.
Oh, wow.
So they've done quite a lot of fantastic theatre productions, but they've also make opera. So they've made an amazing Magic Flute with an opera company, a non-UK opera company that I can't recall, but I should find out the name of. There's some trailers online, it's really worth looking at, it's incredible. We're working with them to essentially make a sort of, in lieu of a set, a big kind of filmic backdrop, and that will run throughout the whole of those nine. And again, in terms of making sure everything's really kind of co-created with our participants, one of their associates, a brilliant Amber, she's been into each of the micro operas she's been in and done a session where she just gets participants just to draw things, just to sort of, you know, draw little doodles or sketches, or, you know, respond to the music in a kind of, you know, visual way. And all of that goes back to 1927, and they'll use that as their sort of inspiration then to create this sort of animated backdrop. So that's going to be a real major way in which everything kind of pulls together into one piece.
That's beautiful.
They're an amazing company, and we're really excited to be working with them.
I have a little caveat to add in. How do participants find out about Streetwise? How do they get involved in Streetwise?
So generally with participants, there's lots of different ways. A lot of people will be referred to us, so they might be in a particular, like a homeless setting or a shelter or a service, and we've got a program producer. We've got a fantastic team of program producers, and they are kind of on the ground in London, Manchester and Nottingham, and so we have great kind of connections with those services. That's often a way that people hear about us, but all of our details about our sessions are sort of up on our website. So if anyone, you know, anyone who's experienced homelessness sort of happens to stumble upon it, we're always, you know, welcome, you know, always welcome, happy to welcome Amazing. New people. And one of the things that we do is we have a sort of so those sort of more public facing sessions are in arts organisations. So we've got a weekly group in London at the South Bank Centre, a weekly group in Nottingham at the Nottingham Playhouse, and a weekly group in Manchester. We move around a little bit. We're at the Nexus Art Cafe at the moment, and that's our sort of weekly group. But alongside that, we do projects in homelessness settings, in sort of frontline homelessness settings. So an example is one of our micro operas has been composed with the fantastic Magpie Project, which is in Newham, and they work specifically with women who've experienced homelessness with children who are under 5. Mm-hmm. So those mums and minis have mums and minis is Jane Williams, the founder's term, which I really enjoy. And they've worked with Electra, one of our composers, to sort of make one of the micro operas. So that's another way that, you know, those women probably wouldn't have heard of us sort of individually, but by connecting with that service, we'll kind of work with them. And sometimes you have, you know, if you do one of those frontline projects, there's someone in there, you know, a couple of people in there might go, oh great, I really want to come and then join the weekly group and kind of continue that connection. And some won't, but some will. So yeah, we have that sort of flow between.
And then like people also communicate with others, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. I always find that, like, how do you communicate with someone who's quite difficult to communicate with?
Yeah, definitely. And it's why, you know, one of the really great sort of challenges for me in this job, you know, I come from very like straight up arts background, but you know, we are an arts organisation, but we're also a homelessness organisation, and there's a whole homelessness sector out there that, you know, we are also a part of. And I think it's why keeping those, you know, having those connections with those, with that sector and with those partners in our regions is so important, because actually, you know, the support workers in those homelessness settings are so important. Those are the people that have that really regular communication with participants and will know the best ways to reach them and to talk about our work. So that collaboration between the organisations is super important.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, you sound super busy as an organisation, but what about the future of Streetwise? And as CEO, what is your vision for Streetwise Opera?
Yeah, I mean, on a very sort of macro level, you know, what we sort of envisage is a world where if you've experienced homelessness, that is not something that's going to stop you from achieving your creative potential. Like, I think one of the things that's really... it's sort of interesting and not necessarily intuitive about our organisation is that, you know, we are a part of the homelessness sector, but when a participant walks through our doors, they're an artist, and that's how they're treated. They're treated as an artist. And we have a phrase that is often we use in the sessions, which is sort of leave your troubles at the door. And that sense that, you know, I think sometimes when participants engage with, sometimes when they engage with other homelessness services, it is a lot of the conversation is about, you know, where they're at and what they're doing and, you know, what their status is. And actually for us, it's like, you don't need to talk about your experience of homelessness in the setting. Like you can come in here and we're talking about art and we're talking about music and we're talking about this project we're working towards. And I think that that's like quite a big a big part of why what we do is impactful, that, you know, our participants, I mean, I'm using the word participants in this conversation, but we always in you know, in all of our language, we would say performers, we'd say our performers. Yeah. And that's because that's who they are. That's what they are when they, yeah, when they're with us. So I think that, you know, that sort of like changing society's perceptions of homelessness is a really big part of what we do. But I think also, like, the other side of that is really changing perceptions of opera. And, you know, sort of linking back a little bit to what we were talking about at the start, you know, we are really excited to be working with young composers, composers that are kind of up and coming, making opera that's new, really kind of pushing the boundaries of what people think opera is, and introducing new audiences to it through the work that we do. And also, and I mean, this is again sort of linking into what we're thinking about in the future, thinking about people that work in other kind of musical forms that might be like, well, opera's nothing to do with me, but like, why not? Like, why can't someone that's writing jazz music think about writing an opera? Like, I think there's loads of scope for really pushing at the boundaries there. And the sort of third strand to it, I guess, is about shifting the art sector a little bit too, that, you know, we our buildings, our organisations need to be more welcoming and inclusive of people who've experienced homelessness, and actually, you know, working in partnership with lots of different arts organisations, I think, is a real way to sort of shift that practice through the sector and get a greater understanding really about how you do that and how you make our buildings really open in that way.
Do they just perform, or can they take on other tasks in the production?
It's so the primary stuff of what we do is performing, but we have in the past and in the future are thinking about other ways that our performers can help in the real kind of making of the work. And we also try and make sure that, as you know, as much as possible, and again, we've got sort of some more plans for this in the next couple of years. You know, we've got two people on our board who used to perform with us. And we also, you know, make sure for most of our, like, our appointments of our permanent staff, one of our performers will sit on the interview panel, so they'll be part of the appointment process. So we try and make sure that there's a sort of wider engagement with the company. And I think there's more we can do on that and more we're going to do in the next couple of years.
That's very exciting.
It's so refreshing, isn't it?
So how can we support Streetwise in its future projects?
So first of all, we love it when people follow us on social media and sign up to our newsletter. We have an amazing head of comms, Ray, and our newsletter is not just about promoting what we do, it is also, you know, great kind of content in and of itself. So at the moment we're doing a thing where we're featuring some kind of interviews with people who work in both the arts and the homelessness sector that we think are really kind of shaking up the sector and doing exciting work. So recently there's an interview that I did with Chris Sonics, who is a fantastic artistic director of Cardboard Citizens, who worked similarish work to us with people that experienced homelessness, but in theatre, primarily in theatre. So it's an amazing interview with him. And also there's an interview with Jane Williams, who's the founder of the Magpie Project, which I referenced earlier. So it's not just simply, oh, here's a thing you can come, you know, a Streetwise thing you can come and see. There's really fascinating and interesting kind of content on there as well. So we'd really recommend people sign up. And please do buy tickets to attend our performances. Again, if you sign up to our comms, you'll hear when they come. We are an organisation that almost all of our funding is fundraised money. Like, we get
it's a good thing you have experience in that.
Absolutely, that's where that fundraising kicks in. So we have money, and we have some money from the government, but only about a seventh of our income comes from the government. So a lot of it comes from trust foundations and from generous individuals. So if people are feeling inspired to give, there's ways to give regularly, but also we run things like this Christmas, where we're running the Big Give Christmas Challenge, and there'll often be other little campaigns through the year. In September I did what actually ended up not being a serpentine swim, because the death of Her Majesty meant that the swim had to be cancelled, but was me swimming 2 miles in a lake somewhere else. And we have other kind of challenge events coming up, so there are always ways people can support one off.
That's incredible. That's
awesome. So just so people can follow along, where can people find you online and Streetwise online to keep engaged?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a fairly inactive Twitter account. I do tweet sometimes, which is @RachAmyWill. And but the place you should really go is the Streetwise Opera channels. So we are at streetwiseopera.org. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Streetwise Opera. And we also have a YouTube channel, also at Streetwise Opera. And some of the content I was talking about lives there. So I really recommend having an explore of that channel.
Great. And for those interested in pursuing a career in producing / art management, any advice for those breaking into the industry?
Yeah, I would say, as I've sort of referenced, I definitely ended up in a job that wasn't a job that I thought I wanted, but actually proved invaluable. And I would say, like, any job in and around the arts will be really valuable and important. In my time, I have duty managed shows, like, as I sort of slightly referenced, I did a sales and ticketing officer job, like, with an outdoor theatre company. And, you know, that job was a job that I kind of got off the basis of, like, you know, being someone on the tills in Marks and Spencers. Like, it was all based around customer experience. But, like, the stuff you learn doing those things about how buildings run and just being, like, in and amongst, you know, the sort of that arts environment is really, really important. So do think about, like, you know, often it feels quite getting that first, like, if you're thinking that you want, like, a permanent salaried, you know, full-time job, like, that can take a little while. But really think about, there's lots of, like, other great stuff that, you know, that you can do, be that, you know, working on a box office, working behind a theatre bar, like, that all of that stuff is really valuable. I would go and see as much theatre and opera as you can. As we were referencing a little bit at the beginning, like, there are really good ticket deals if you have a look for them. And often, you know, there are, like, I still feel like I can, you know, I love getting a standing ticket last minute. Like, you can get really good, like, good deals. And I think that just
seeing, cunning, just because you got a standing ticket does not mean you have to
stand. Well, absolutely. And I've utilized that option before. So yeah, I completely agree. I think it's super great. Just go and see stuff, because I think also just developing your own taste of, like, what do you like and what excites you and what interests you is super important. And the other thing I would say is find your peers, like, find people who are also kind of at a similar stage to you and want to do the stuff that you do. And I think that one of the things I referenced, the Old Vic New Voices scheme, in terms of my own career trajectory, and one of the reasons that was amazing is that you are making a peer group. So it's not just that, you know, we're encouraging emerging producers, it's also the directors and the writers and the actors, and you meet, you know, companies form out of that, producing directing partnerships. You know, if you're doing something in a more freelancey way, often you get producer director pairings that, you know, you work really well together, and that can kind of shift up. And so I think finding the people, both, you know, your own kind of producer network, if it's producing you're doing, but also in your other kind of disciplines, is super important and really helps you along the way, I think.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel.
It's my pleasure. It's been so nice to be here. Thank you so much.
This week's question is...
That was so announcery.
Well, yeah, it sounded like I should have been, like, ringside of a boxing ring or something.
Can we please keep that in?
So this week's question is, what do you look for in a good leader?
I look for someone who looks outside of what their own role is. So if it is an opera singer, I don't want you to be only an opera singer. I kind of want to know that you are still human outside of that, and that you can think in a creative way to get different things out there. But the idea that you're more than just the one thing that you are, and you can see without blinkers on, like, that you can look at the major picture and zoom out and say, yes, I have this, but doesn't mean that I can't help someone else to get that too. Like, being able to communicate more than just your craft, but also communicate your passions.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think for me, a leader is somebody who has a presence within the room. I like the idea of me feeling like I can trust whoever is in that leadership position. And with that, when I say a presence, I don't mean like a dominating presence. I mean like that feeling of trust with that person, and trusting that the person that is leading you has the ability to make all of the cogs turn within the machine, and actually see that it is one big collaboration in whatever project it is, whether it be an opera production or whether it be a business, that leader has to make sure that all of the cogs are turning in the right direction. So yeah, I think that's what I look for.
That's a really good point. It's the fact that I think it's the same idea. It's like being in a room and knowing what your responsibility is in that room.
Exactly.
And that is it for this week's episode. Thank you so, so much, Rachel, for being here and chatting with us and being all businessy. It's actually really nice to talk business sometimes.
I love it. I live for that. But also thank you to you guys for tuning in to yet another episode of AA Opera. It's great to have you with us. If you really enjoyed the podcast, then please subscribe and rate this podcast. That would really help us out.
Yes, and you can always, you know, give us a coffee if you feel the need that we are thirsty or need more energy. But we have been really appreciating all the love for season 7. And if you could just buy us a coffee to just, you know, financially show us how much you love us.
Help fuel it. I mean, to access that, if you just go to our Instagram bio and click buy us a coffee, you'll see what that link is all about. And it will really help us out.
Which also reminds me, you can follow us on Instagram. We are AA Opera on Instagram, so please follow us along there. And do share these episodes if you find them helpful or lovely.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.